पारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रय कपाणय ज्ञान मुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द 18th चैप्टर। वी डिस्कस द फर्स्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द 18th चैप्टर वेयर कृष्णा इज टेलिंग हाउ एक्शन विद डिटैचमेंट, एक्शन विद अ मूड ऑफ रेनन्सिएशन इज फार बेटर देन रेनन्सिएशन ऑफ एक्शन। So let's look at a few analytical points. We discussed this till verse 9, but let's look at a few analytical points over here. So this is the overview of the chapter. We are right now in the first section on karma yoga, that it is better to do one's activity than to renounce activity. So we discussed about kaya, about sannyas, nitya karma and nitya karma. So now we will see some important point. How action in renunciation, which ultimately culminates in bhakti, integrates the virtues of both. Now karma, here we are discussing these three parts, karma, jnana and bhakti. So here, bhakti is more or less karma with detachment and attachment, with detachment to matter and attachment to Krishna. Karma here refers not to karma yoga, it refers to karma kanda. So the positive of karma is that it is natural. We all want to be active. But the negative of karma is that most of the actions that we do cause bondage in material existence. Then a positive of jnana is that it is liberating. Because one is not going to get into activity. It's slowly liberating, but the negative is that being inactive is unnatural. So in Hegelian analysis, Hegel was a European thinker, so he had the idea that first one proposes one particular idea, that is thesis. Then one tries to counter that idea, that is antithesis. And then one combines both thesis and antithesis together, and then one arrives at a synthesis. Synthesis means a higher understanding which integrates the virtues of both the contrary schools of thought while removing their blemishes. So we'll see how bhakti is a synthesis. You know, so when we act out of devotion to the Supreme Lord, action is natural. But because that action is not motivated by our own desires, it is motivated by the longing to serve the Lord, so it is non-binding, it is liberating. So in this way, bhakti is natural as well as liberating, and the negatives of both, it is binding or natural, are removed. So this is the spirit in which we act. So now when we talk about jnana, there are different kinds of jnanis. So those who don't practice bhakti at all, they just perpetuate jnana sadhana. There are those who practice bhakti but offend the Lord's form. They both fall back. This is what Chakravarti Pal explains. And as practice bhakti to attain sayujya. So this is referred to by 12.345, and again it will come in 18.5455. And practice bhakti and by devotee associate attain prema. They are the topmost jnanis. So we'll discuss about these jnanis more when we come to 18.54 and 55. But suffice it to say that the word jnani shouldn't be equated just with mayavadis all the time. So Krishna has said earlier, naiva tyaga phalam labhet. That if one renounces out of frustration because kaya klesha bhayat tagyet, then we will not get the phala of tyaga. Renunciation itself is not the fruit. Our goal for renunciation is purification and illumination. We want to be free from our anarthas and we want to get higher understanding. So misery can be an initial spur but not a sustainer for renunciation. If you want sustainer, then there has to be philosophical conviction. And there has to be devotional attraction. So we discussed this earlier. Renunciation is not of lack of ambition, but is super ambition. Renounce not because what the world offers is too tough, but too little. One who renounces, the person thinks that, oh, there must be, all even the most glamorized happiness in this world is so temporary. There must be some higher happiness in life. And I want that higher happiness. In material life, the pleasure is not worth the trouble. Whereas in spiritual life, the happiness is worth whatever the trouble is required. So now we're going forward. Kaya klesha bhayat tyajet. That was what we discussed in the earlier verse. So kaya kleshas, trouble for the body. Now Krishna has told in 17.516 that don't torment the body unnecessarily. Mam chaivanta sharirastham tam vidya asur nishayan. So Krishna talks about those who torment their bodies out of a false sense of illusion, and they are foolish. So don't, Krishna says that they are demoniac actually, he says. But then, there are two extremes. One is we torment the body, and the other is we pamper the body, and if any activity causes us trouble, we want to give it up, even if it's a prescribed duty. So that is also not good. That means we focus not on what causes trouble or what gives pleasure, but on what will be required for bringing about purification, elevation and liberation. So accept bodily trouble when it is necessary for the sake of duty. Prabhupada's standard example is that when we have to take bathe in the morning, or a housewife has to cook in the summer, like that. So this is what we have discussed till now. Now let's move forward and discuss from 18.10 onwards. So till now, 18.7 to 9, Krishna has talked about Tyaga in the three modes. Now he will elaborate on how Tyaga will lead to liberation. How now Tyaga, in terms of Tyaga in goodness, will lead to liberation. Nadveshtya kushalam karma kushalena anusajyate Tyagi sattva samavishto medhavi chinna samshayaha. So nadveshtya akushalam karma. Akushalam karma is that work which is inauspicious. Kushala can mean expert, it can mean expertise in terms of that which brings good results. So there are some works which cause, which are pleasurable to us, some works which are unpleasant to us. But nadveshtya kushalam karma. So if some works which we don't like to do, but still we do them because it's duty. Kushale nanu shajjate, and some works we like to do, but that doesn't mean that we just keep doing them and forget that there is a higher reality to life. So either way, one doesn't let the material dominate one's conceptions. Tyagi sattva samavishto. So such a person is a tyagi who is neither attached nor averse. Sattva samavishto. Such a person is absorbed in sattva guna. In goodness absorbed. Medhavi chinna samshayaha. Medhavi. Such a person is truly intelligent, because that intelligence has been able to comprehend that the material does not have to have a monopoly on the emotional. That means all our emotions don't have to be restricted to material things. We can have emotions for higher things also. So medhavi chinna samshayaha. Chinna samshayaha. The person's all doubts are removed because the person has understood that the art of work is to work with detachment. Otherwise one has so many doubts. If I do this, will I get enjoyment? Or if I get the enjoyment, will I also get bondage? How can I save myself from bondage? Should I renounce all the work? All the samshaya is there. All the samshayas go away for a person who acts, who is medhavi, and who acts in karma yoga. So at this point, Krishna is talking about karma yoga. And how this karma yoga will mature into bhakti yoga, Krishna will explain in the later part of this chapter. Prabhupada explains everything from the perspective of bhakti yoga over here. Let's move forward, which is what? So bhakti yoga will come later on. Prabhupada is giving us everything from the point of view of the conclusion. Now the question, maybe some people may say that, why should one work? You know, if one wants to avoid bondage, it's best to avoid work also, then there will be no bondage. So then Krishna is telling over here, actually that is not possible. Nahi deha bhrita shakyam tyaktum karmanya sheshatah yastu karma phalatyagi satyagi tyabhidhiyate nahi deha bhrita shakyam. Shakya, it is not possible, O Arjuna. Shakya for deha bhrita, for one who is a living entity having a body. Dehi deha bhrita shakyam tyaktum karmanya sheshatah, to give all work up completely. Asheshataha. Krishna has used the word asheshataha several times, most prominently in 7.2, where he has stated that Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshamya asheshataha. So I am speaking to you incomplete, with nothing left. So like that, tyaktum karmanya asheshataha. So without anything remaining, without any shesha remaining, to give up all karma is not possible. Therefore, yastu karma phalatyagi, karma phalatyagi, that one who is a karma phalatyagi, satyagi ityabhidhiyate. So therefore, one who gives up the fruits of work, that person is a true renunciate. Now, because ultimately, the point is, as long as we are embodied, the body itself, even for its basic survival, requires us to do certain activities. And as science has advanced more, we also come to know that there are so many activities which go on inside the body even without our knowledge. There are involuntary activities. Right now, all of us are breathing, food is getting digested, the blood is getting circulated. And all this is happening. There's no way we can stop it. So, and this is not just, this is just one kind of activity, but even the kind of activities required for basic bodily maintenance, we have to eat and we have to do something for that. We have to protect ourselves. So all this kind of action will cause bondage. And how does one stay free from that? Giving up all action is not possible, because that will make even survival impossible. So from a practical point of view, it's impossible from a survival perspective. And moreover, it is our very nature to be active, whether it be embodied nature or whether it is a liberated nature. The soul also is active. So this same theme has been talked by Krishna in the third chapter when he says, Nahi kaschit kshanam apijata tishthatya karma krit karite hi avishah karma sarva prakriti jair gunai. So he says there, Nahi kaschit kshanam apijata tishthatya karma krit. That even for a kshana, even for one moment, it is not possible to stay away from action. Therefore, one should act in a way that does not cause bondage. Satyagi ityabhidhiyate. Then after that, let's move to the next verse. Yeah. So, anishtam ishtam mishram cha trividham karmana phalam bhavati tyaginam pretya natu sanyasinam kvachet. So now Krishna concludes that yes, it is better to renounce than to act with renunciation. But now he is giving a broad contradiction. A person who is attached and a person who is detached. Atyaginam and sannyasinam. So an atyagi, a person who is not renounced, that means the person who is attached, that person will get the results. What kind of results? Anishtam ishtam mishram cha. That, you know, when we do good karma, we get good results, ishta that is. When we do bad karma, we get bad results, that is anishta. And then there is mishra. Sometimes our actions are a combination of the good and bad, and accordingly we get results which are good and bad. Anishtam ishtam mishram cha trividham karmana phalam. These three kinds of fruits are there. And bhavati atyaginam pretya. So Krishna has used the word pretya also earlier. Pretya means after death. Atyaginam pretya. So for one who is not renounced, that person will get all these results in due course of time. Natu sannyasinam kvachit. But a sannyasi will not get these results. A sannyasi will not get. Sannyasi will stay free from these results and will eventually become liberated. So basically Krishna is concluding here. That means there are two broad contradictions Krishna is making. First is between a person who is acting, who previous verse was the contrast between the person who is trying to give up all action, and whereas a person who is acting but with detachment. So a person who is trying to give up all action, that's practically not possible. A person who is giving, acting without attachment, that person will become liberated. That is one comparison. Now, here both of them are trying to seek liberation. Both the person who is trying to give up attachment, action, and the person who is trying to do action but without attachment. Both are seeking liberation. But among these two, Krishna is saying, what is preferable? To act with detachment. But now, Krishna has a broad comparison. One is a person who is acting with attachment and a person who is acting without attachment. So if we compare these two, a person who is acting with attachment will lead to bondage and will experience bondage, and a person who is acting with detachment will experience liberation. Natu sannyasinam kvachit, Krishna says, certainly sannyasi will not become bound even slightly. Now we move to the second section, the jnana of a karma yogi, which keeps the karma yogi free from bondage. Let's look at that. So Krishna will provide this expression in terms of Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya, the analysis of material elements into material factors. Panchaitani mahabaho karanani nibodhame Sankhya kritante proktani siddhaye sarva karmanam. So panchaitani mahabaho. Oh mahabaho, Krishna second time referring to Arjuna in this chapter as mahabaho. Panchaitani, five there are. Karanani nibodhame, there are five factors of action. Sankhya kritante proktani. Sankhya, within the Vedic analysis name is Sankhya. Kritante, So for the kruti, for the action to lead to its anta, to its conclusion, proktani. So these are known in Sankhya as five actions, five factors. Siddhaye sarva karmanam. If a factor of, if a of action is to lead to its fruit, these five factors are involved. And Prabhupada explains the ultimate control is invested in the super soul. So Prabhupada gives an interesting analysis over here. Sankhya means the stock of knowledge, and Vedanta is the final stock of knowledge accepted by all leading acharyas. So Sankhya is the stock of knowledge. Now what does stock mean? The word stock can mean that which supports, that which sustains, like a flower has a stalk, and then it has a lower part where which it is connected to the tree or the shrub or the creeper, and then there is the body of the flower, the upper part of the flower. So like that, the fully blossomed flower is the Vedanta, and Sankhya is the stalk. So Sankhya and Vedanta are not disconnected, they are connected. With Sankhya, its metaphysical division is accepted as an integral part of Vedanta, but Vedanta goes beyond matter to spirit. Sankhya and Vedanta, as we have discussed, they are two different systems of thought, schools of thought, two different philosophies within the Vedic tradition, within the six systems of philosophy. And among them, Vedanta is considered the conclusion. So Krishna is saying that this Vedantic conclusion is there, but now it doesn't reject Sankhya in its entirety. The Sankhya conceptual analysis is being used over here. Siddhaye sarva karmanam. For any action to attain its perfection, these factors are involved. Now let's go to the next verse to see what are those factors. Adhishthanam tatha karta karanam cha prithak vedham vividhascha prithak cheshta daivam chaivatra panchamam. So adhishthanam tatha karta. Adhishthanam. So adhishthanam means the place. Karta is the doer. Karanam cha prithak vidham. Karanam refers to the instruments through which action is done. That means that refers to the senses. Vividhascha prithak cheshta. The various endeavors that are done. And then lastly, daivam chaivatra panchamam. Daivam is destiny or the will of the Lord, or the will of, you could say the super soul specifically, because we are talking about material actions over here. Let's try to understand these five factors with a simple example. So adhishthanam tatha karta karanam cha prithak vidham. So for example, if there is a cricketer, if there is a cricket, say a batsman is batting, and now the batsman has to hit a sixer, has to hit a big shot on the delivery. Now what are all the factors that are involved? First of all, the batsman has to be alive. You know, dead batsman cannot hit. So karta. Karta is there. And then after that, there is karanam that is required. The batsman may be there, but if the hand is fractured, you know, the hand is in one plaster and the other hand is in another plaster, he can't even hold the bat. So how can the batsman hit a sixer? So there is, the karanam is there. So that means, first of all, there has to be a doer and there has to be an instrument for doing the action. But this is common. But along with that, along with Krishna is going to deeper analysis. So it's not that any Tom, Dick and Harry can just, somebody is bowling, some top class bowler is bowling, and somebody just swings the bat and goes for a sixer. It doesn't happen like that. There has to be endeavor. There has to be practice. Practice makes a man perfect. Even if a person is talented, now for talent to transform into achievement, there has to be serious practice. So that is cheshta, vividhascha prithak cheshta. And then there is daivam chaivatra panchamam. Actually, every batsman or every sports person, in fact, knows in general that destiny plays a significant role in life. In all walks of life, actually. Without destiny, nothing not ultimately works out. Now, cricket, for example, sports stars, all cricketers have their own, many cricketers have their own superstitions. And there are some cricketers who may say, tie a sort of kerchief around their neck or some sort of bandana around their neck or something like that, because they feel that a sign of good fortune. One famous cricketer, you know, who would keep a red handkerchief in his pocket with one third of the pocket handkerchief showing out and two thirds stuffed inside. There was another cricketer who would always, when he would go out to bat, before that he would go to the washrooms in the dressing room and make sure that every commode's lid was closed. His idea was that if the commode lid are not closed, then I will not be able to perform well. So now we will say, this is stupid. What is the commode lid closed got to do with the person they were able to bat in the field? Yes, that particular linkage may be superstitious, But the point is that any performer, these performers know that actually peak performance is not just a matter of their own diligence. There is some higher providence also involved in it. And these are various ways in which they are trying to reach out to the higher providence. Reach out to higher providence. That's what they are trying to do over here. So, generally, as we have discussed, if cricketers also, they may be playing and they suddenly, you know, the person who's a champion batsman suddenly swings the bat and finds his middle stump knocked out. So it is clean bowled. It's dismissed. So then that person doesn't want to do that. The person is a champion batsman. Yet why does the person become bold like that? Because you may say that's out of form. Now who wants to be out of form? Actually, nobody wants to be out of form, but still the person goes out of form. So these are not factors which are in our control entirely. So sometimes, despite our diligence, despite our strong desire and willpower, things may just not work. So every performer knows that there has to be some higher factor that is involved. And that higher factor, now of course, there is the contrary saying that fortune favors the brave. That means those who are courageous and those who are enterprising and those who try various things. For the fortune favors them. So that is true, fortune favors the brave, there's no doubt about that. But that doesn't mean that a wise person shouldn't acknowledge that there is fortune. There is fortune, there is some higher factor which is also involved in our discussion, in our analysis. Now this is the four factors we have discussed. We have not yet discussed the first, that is Adhishthanam. What is Adhishthanam? Adhishthanam, Prabhupada translated, is the place of action. And then in that, that is what he used in the word to word. And then Prabhupada puts in the sentence translation as the act, the body. So the place of action. In general, we have for my overall body also needs to be healthy, and my specific organ which I am going to use for that particular action has to also be healthy. So for a batsman, say, the hands have to be in good condition, and along with that, the body also has to be in a basic fitness, basically fit. Or for that matter, if a person is going to speak. So for a person who is an orator, a specific organ which is used for performance over there is the speaking organ. So speaking organ, that karanam has to be important, that is important, vitally important, indispensably important, and that has to be functional. But along with that, the whole body also has to be functional. So some commentators also use the word adhishthanam to refer to the place of action. So we could say that the arena also has to be conducive. So you know, batsman has to perform, then there has to be, the pitch has to be good. And if the pitch is very bad, then for the batsman to perform becomes a little more difficult. That is also one factor in the performance. So like that, these factors have to be considered. So basically the point is, Krishna is saying there are these different factors of action, and one should consider these factors of action and then act accordingly. So why is Krishna talking about his factors of action? He will describe that a wise person, a jnani, acknowledges all these factors. And that's why doesn't arrogate to oneself, means assume for oneself, credit when credit is not due. So let's go to the next verse. So, sharirvan mano bhiryat karma prarabhate nara nyayam va viparitam va panchaite tasya hetavah. So, sharir van manobhiryat. Sharir van manobhir. So, body, mind and speech. Sharir van manobhiryat karma prarabhate naraha. The karma that a person starts, that may sometimes nyayam va viparitam va. That means nyaya is that which is right. Viparitam is that which is wrong. Nyayam va viparitam va. That means sometimes when the activity which we do, it sometimes gives good results, sometimes bad results. But for whatever the results are coming, panchaite tasya hetavah. These five factors are involved in getting those results. For sharir van manobhir. That means we may do activities with the body, with the mind and with the words, but still, and those activities may give good or bad results. But whether the activity is bodily, mental, verbal, whether they be auspicious or inauspicious, all of them involve these five factors. So Krishna is emphasizing the pervasiveness of these five factors of action. And Prabhupada in the purport mentions that right and wrong is determined by whether it is according to scripture or not according to scripture. So let's move to the next verse. Tatraivam sati kartaram atmanam kevalam tuya pashyatya krita buddhitvan nasa pashyati durmatihin. Tatraivam sati kartaram. So tatraivam means among these. Kartaram, kartaram is the worker. Atmanam kevalam tuya. So if somebody thinks that I am the only doer and there is no doer apart from me, atmanam kevalam tuya pashyatya akrita buddhitvan. So such a person is pashyati akrita buddhitvan. One who sees like this is akrita buddhi. That means this person's intelligence is not very is not good, is not satisfactory. Akrita buddhi, the buddhi is not able to do kruti properly, the buddhi is not functioning properly. Nasa pashyati durmatihi, such a person is not the seer. Durmatihi, durmatihi means misdirected consciousness. So misdirected consciousness. So this is the thrust of Krishna's argument, that don't assume that you are the only doer. Sometimes when the scripture Bhagavad Gita says that don't think that we are the doers, we shouldn't think we are the doers. What does it mean? You know, what does it mean? It's very difficult to for people to understand this point. What does it mean? They think, okay, I'm not the doer. If I would not be speaking here, then people would not be hearing what I'm speaking. If I am say not, if I would, some scientist has not done the invention, then the particular gadget would not have got invented. You know, if a particular say general had not led the army properly, the war would not have been won. So how could one say that one is not the doer? So one is the doer, no doubt. But here the illusion is to think that one is the only doer, because even if that general is intelligent and general makes the right decisions in the war, but still there are so many other factors which are involved which have to go right for the decision to lead to success. So therefore, to think that I am the only doer and therefore the results are due only to me, there is pashyatya akrita buddhitva. Such a person's intelligence is not proper and therefore nasa pashyati durmati. That person can't see actually, because the person's durmati, the consciousness is so obsessed with ego that one can't understand what is happening. The thrust of the point is that actually one should acknowledge especially the role of the super soul, as Prabhupada mentions. We have to acknowledge the role of the super soul in whatever is happening. So if one focuses only on the material causes, then one doesn't get a proper understanding of things. And if one thinks only on oneself at the ego level, then also one doesn't get understanding of things. So the final cause is the supreme, the personality of Godhead, and that has to be acknowledged. And that will be when say. So now Krishna goes further and takes from the alternative perspective, the converse perspective, that if one has this knowledge, then one will not become bound. Yasyana hankrito bhavo buddhir yasyana lipyate hatva pisaiman lokan nahanti na nibadyate. So yasyana hankrito bhavo na ahankrito. When for a person there is no ahankar, and without an ahankar, with such a bhava, one acts. Buddhir yasya na lipyate. Such a person's intelligence is not entangled. And then hatvapi sa iman lokan. If a person does even an activity which is as binding as killing, you know, murder or killing is considered to be a very severe crime. And in one sense, what a kshatriya does is killing. So this is the reference to Arjuna's dilemma on the battlefield. Should I fight or not fight? Should I kill or not kill? So Krishna says, if one doesn't have ahankar, if one doesn't think that one is the doer, then even if one acts, hatvapi sa iman lokan. No, hatvapi, even if one kills, still na hanti na nibadhyate. One will not become bound and one will not be actually killing also. So is this verse a license for indiscriminate killing? No, not at all. Can a murderer say that, you know, actually, a murderer says, I'll go and drop bombs in people and say, I'm not the doer. No, so renouncing doership is not just a simple verbalization. No, I am not the doer. The police will say then, we'll catch you, we'll hang you, and we are also not the doers. Anybody can do anything. One person slaps another person. I am not the doer. The other person slaps the person. I am also not the doer. No, that will, this is, we cannot have, in the name of saying that I am not the doer, we cannot reject responsibility for our actions. So we, it is we who are the choosers and it is who are the doers. So we are responsible for our actions. But when we think that we are the only doers, that becomes the illusion. Even terrorists know that they make plans to pull off a major suicide bombing project or something like that. They may want to blow up a building or anything like that. But then it's not that they can do it independently. They also need, so many things have to go right. Otherwise they may blow up things before they reach the place itself. They may blow up at the right place but at the wrong time. Maybe too early or too late. Or the bombs may not get detonated. So many things can go wrong from their perspective and right from the perspective of the innocent victims who otherwise have been blown to tetherines, blown to smithereens actually. So the point is, when a person has proper knowledge and then one acts according to duty. Prior to this verse, Krishna has talked about how one has to work niyatam sangarahitam. One has to work according to karma, according to scripture. One has to do one's prescribed duties, and while doing one's prescribed duties, one should do them in a mood of detachment. So, whimsical, non-scriptural, arbitrary action, that will cause bondage, no doubt about it. And that is not the kind of action that the scripture recommends at all. And that is not the kind of action that can be licensed as per this or rationalized by this verse. What this verse is assuming is that the action is according to scripture and the action is done with detachment. It's a part of one's prescribed duty. And even if the prescribed duty seems as heinous, as bloody as killing, that will not involve any disaster because it is actually done na aham krito bhavo. It is done without attachment, without the mentality of karta. Now Krishna will go into a deeper analysis of action by talking about analysis action in a different set of terms. Let's look at it. So Prabhupada gives the example here. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. When a soldier kills under a personal account, he is certainly judged by a court of law. So we move forward from here. So point here is that one recognizes that one is acting for a higher purpose, then one will not get bound because one is not having the hankar of acting. So jnanam jnayam parijnata trivida karma chodana karanam karma karteti trivida karma sangraha. So now this verse is a very important verse to understand the flow of the Gita in the next 20 verses or so. So, jnanam jnayam pradijnata trivida karma chodana. Chodana means impetus or inspiration. What is it that that is involved in action? There is jnanam jnayam parijnata. There is knowledge, the objective of knowledge and the knower. We will understand this. And karanam karma karteti trivida karma sangraha. So, karanam is the instrument by which action is done. Karma is the action and the karta is the doer. So let's understand this carefully and then we will move forward to the next concepts. So suppose jnanam jnayam parijnata trivida karma chodana. What does it refer to? You know, suppose a person goes for sightseeing. A person goes into a natural vicinity and wants to look at birds, say. I like to look at the flowers and the clouds and the mountains and the birds and the animals, the flora and fauna one wants to see. So at that time there is jnanam jnayam parijnata. Jnayam is the person. The person who is the knower or who wants to be the knower. Jnana is the process of knowledge and parijnata. So jnanam jnayam parijnata. Krishna talks about these three. Parijnata is the knower, and jnaya is the object of knowledge. So jnana is knowledge itself. So now what is the object of knowledge? Okay, the object. So the jnana would be person will observe. Okay, observe the birds, observe the animals, observe the clouds, observe the flowers, like that observation. And then the generally the say the goal of knowledge would be maybe to get health satisfaction. I know so many birds. I know so many animals. Or it may be a deepened appreciation of nature. It may be at a, if you go to a deeper level, ultimately whatever we do is for happiness. So there is knowledge and there is objective of knowledge. Now when say students study in college, they may study engineering or some other professional stream like that. Now often it is not that they love that field. They study that field because that's what will give them enjoyment. That's what will give them employment rather, not enjoyment, employment. And after employment, they feel we can get enjoyment. So that means when they are studying also, their goal is not just knowledge of their study. Their objective is something else. Objective is employment and enjoyment. So that's why jnana and jnayam can be different. The object of knowledge, I may be studying software engineering. I may be learning about different programs, different softwares, different packages. But my goal may not be, goal of knowledge is not just study of that. My goal of knowledge is to earn a living, to get prestige in society, to get power, possessions like that. So jnanam, jnayam, parijnana, these are the three factors of action. And then karanam karma karteti. So actually we discussed this earlier also. Karanam karma karteti. That if I have, if somebody has to become an eloquent speaker, then that person has to be there. The voice has to be there. Karanam karteti. And the karma, the person has to speak. And the person speaks once, twice, thrice, four times, 50 times, 100 times, and by that gradually becomes a good speaker. Karanam karma karteti trividha karma sangraha. These three are the components of action. Now again, this can be analyzed in terms of the three basic factors that exist. That we have discussed earlier, this is Jagat, Jagdish and Jiva. So Jiva, Jagat and Jagdish. Jeev is the living entity, the soul. Jagat is matter or material world. And Jagdish is the lord of the material world. Actually, the lord is Jagat, not just the lord of the material world, he's the lord of Jiva also. So, he's the lord of all of existence. He's Parameshwara. So, there is Jagat, Jagjiva and Jagdish. All three are from J, if you want to remember it that way also. They can be referred to by other names also. We can have matter, consciousness and supreme. Matter, the consciousness and the enjoyer, as Prabhupada refers to it in chapter title of chapter 13. So matter is Jagat, consciousness is the soul or Jiva, and Jagdish is the enjoyer, the supreme lord. He is the Uttama Purusha. He is the supreme Purusha, the supreme enjoyer. So now, same way this factor analysis can be used over here. So now, how is this different from the earlier analysis given in 18.15? In 18.15, Krishna has talked about it. He is talking about these three factors only. Let's look at it once again. We'll understand this better. So in general, how are these factors related? So Jiva is Jiva itself. Ishvara is Jagdish in our current terminology. And Prakriti is Jagat. So the relation is Jiva desires, Ishvara sanctions and Prakriti executes. So Jiva desires, that means what? Say a batsman is batting and then the bowler is bowling and the batsman thinks, okay, on this ball I want to hit a sixer. That is the desire of the Jiva. So now sometimes the batsman just swing the bat and they completely miss the line of the ball, and then the ball may just rattle the stumps or ball may just harmlessly go to the keeper and ball will be lost. So the Jiva didn't desire, but it's not that every time a batsman desires to hit a sixer, the batsman can hit a sixer successfully. Not. So then Ishvara has to sanction. So when the Ishvara sanctions, then the Prakriti executes. So the material nature executes, and that's how action happens. This is the progression. Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti. All three come together. So now, if these are the three which you have discussed earlier in the 7th chapter also, Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti, Jiva, Jagat and Jagdish. So now let's see them in terms of what we discussed in the 14-15 verses, and then we'll come to this analysis. So Jiva is the Karta, Daiva is the Ishvara, and Prakriti is the Adhishthanam and Karanam. Prakriti can refer to the body and the specific senses within the body. And then Cheshta is Endeavor. Endeavor is a combination of Jiva and Prakriti. the jiva endeavors through the body. Without the body, the jiva cannot endeavor. So the jiva acts through the body. So singer wants to become exercise sphere singer. The singer practices with the throat. There are exercises and there are laborious practices by which the jiva becomes exposed, that is cheshta. So we discussed over here, is this 18.17 license for violence? No, the Bhagavad Gita's message is not silence, not violence, but transcendence. The Bhagavad Gita's message of transcendence. And significantly, this is the only reference to war in the last six chapters after 11.32-34. And it's also an indirect reference. That means Krishna is not telling fight. Krishna is simply telling that even if one fights and kills, that person will not lead to bondage. This was Hatvapi Saiman Loka. And we will not go into the technicalities of various things. So now let's look at here. So 18.18 and 19 we are discussing. So 18.18 is six elements. Jnanam, Jnayam, Parijnata, Karanam, Karma, Karta. So Jnanam is knowledge. That's what we discussed. That is just to be known as the impetus for action. And then Parijnata is the knower. Then we discuss Karanam, Karma, Karteti. So now from these six elements, Krishna will reduce the six elements to three elements in the 19th verse. And these three elements will be analyzed in terms of the three modes in the subsequent set of verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So let's look at 18.19. Jnanam karma cha karta cha tridhaiva guna bhedata prochyate guna sankhyane yathavashrutanyapi. So shrunutanyapi, Arjuna, please shrunu here, yathavach, hear this properly. So what does he want to hear? Prochyate guna sankhyane. Please hear this analysis in terms of the three modes, guna sankhya, in terms of the three modes. What are this analysis? Tridhaiva guna bhedata. These three things can be analyzed according to three modes. What are the three things? Jnanam karma cha karta cha. So we will see in the next verses, Krishna will talk about the jnana in three modes, he will talk about karma in three modes, he will talk about karta in three modes. So in the previous verse, he has talked about six elements and now he has reduced them to three. So why is that? Let's look at this. So the elements that are there in red in this slide, they have been left out by Krishna because they can be conflated. Conflated means joined, not conflated, they can be combined or integrated with the other elements. So let's see how. Gaya is basically the doer. So Gaya is the object, Gaya is the object of knowledge. So what happens to the Gaya? Actually, ultimately it is matter which is to be known. So Krishna will take jnana, karma and karta. Jnanam karma cha karta cha tridhaiva karma bhidata. So tridhaiva. So what has happened is Krishna has included these other three. This karanam and the jnaya. These two are material. These two are in terms of matter. And the parijnata is the knower. And the karma is also, both of these the same persons. The person, sorry, karta, not karma, the karta. The person who is the doer and the person who is the knower is the same. If a person wants to sing, that person has to learn about singing. And then the person becomes a knower and then the person sings. That time the person becomes a doer. So knower and sing, knower and doer are the same. So that's why parijnata and karta can be made into one. Then jnana is related with the jnanendriyas. It is more of a perception. And then karma is related with the karmendriyas. So it is more with respect to action. So jnanam karma cha karta cha. So these three are kept separate. And as so parijnata is combined with karta. And actually jnaya and karanam, these are dead matter practically speaking. So the object of knowledge and the instruments of knowledge. So these Krishna does not include because they are just dead matter in terms of they being made of certain things. So we cannot transform the consciousness of dead matter. Certain elements are in certain things, certain modes, and they are just the way they are. Krishna is talking about all this analysis from a transformational perspective, and that's why he focuses on that which can be transformed. So we will see this further. So analysis, so what has been talked about over here? Jnana, Karma and Karta. So this will be analyzed. So Jnana in terms of three modes analyzed from 20 to 22. Then Karma in three modes analyzed from 23 to 25. And Karta in three modes analyzed from 26 to 28. So now, how are these related to action? Jnana is the first step in action. If only when I have knowledge, then I will do something. A child comes to know that chocolate is delicious. So chocolate is delicious. Maybe somebody else, a friend tells chocolate is delicious. Maybe the mother tells chocolate is delicious. Brother tells chocolate is delicious. And then that person takes the chocolate. And the person takes the chocolate and eats the chocolate. Then what happens? That person, oh, it's jnana, it's delicious. Then first thing is, the person thinks, oh, I want a chocolate because it's delicious. Then jnana, then there's karma. Then the person may think, oh, maybe I'll go to the mother or the father. I want chocolate. And then karta, then the person goes and gets the chocolate. So jnana is there, karma is there, and karta are there. All three, they comprise to the development of action, to the unfolding of action. And similarly, what else is there? So Krishna will have one transitional verse, then the 29th verse, where he will explain further these three further elements, buddhi, dhruti, and sukha. Again, in terms of three modes. So buddhi is understanding. So we'll discuss the difference between jnana and buddhi when we come to it. Jnana is more in terms of conceptual knowledge. Buddhi is more in terms of the seeing things in their proper perspective. The understanding which is required for action. This is more at the beginning of action. This is at the beginning of the implementation of action. And then dhruti is determination. When one is acting, one has to continue to act in order to get the results. And ultimate phala is what we want is through sukha. So the sukha that we get can also be of three types. It can be in goodness, passion and ignorance. And that will be discussed in verses 36 to 39. So let's look at 20 to 22 now. So here Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. So in the 17th chapter, different types of worship according to modes have been mentioned. And now Krishna will mention about different types of knowledge. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavam avyamikshate avibhaktam vibhekshe vibhakteshu tadjnanam vidyasatvikam sarvabhuteshu yenaikam. Among all living entities, ekam. Ekam means only one. Bhavam avyamikshate. One sees that imperishable truth, that abhava avyaya. One sees that. And avibhaktam vibhakteshu. What does one see? Avibhaktam. Avibhaktam means that there is no difference. Vibhakteshu, although things are differentiated. Tadjnanam vidyasatvikam. This is knowledge in the mode of goodness. So knowledge in the mode of goodness is not necessarily the completeness of complete spiritual knowledge. So here it's more or less a sort of impersonalistic perception where one sees the oneness beyond the differentiation. At the material level, we see things differently. No, this is male, this is female, this is Indian, this is American, this is young, this is old, this is good looking, this is not good looking. So all these differences we definitely see at the material level. But we need to go beyond these differences to see the commonality, the oneness of spirit. And that we see based on the knowledge and goodness. So what happens? Sarva bhuteshu yenaikam bhavam avyayam ikshate. Avyaya bhava one sees. And avibhaktam vibhakteshu, that there is vibhakteshu, there is lot of differentiation, but even amid the differentiation there is avibhaktam, there is unity. So whatever diversity one sees, below that there is unity, that is knowledge in goodness. Tajjnanam vidhisatvikam. So now Krishna is not necessarily saying that one has to refer to scripture to come to knowledge in goodness. Even by one's inference one can come to these truths. For example, Prabhupada talked about Socrates. So Socrates was not necessarily in any parampara, but he had metaphysical knowledge about the soul. He was fearless at the time of death based on his understanding of the soul and especially the immortality of the soul. And in fact, in several of his dialogues, say like Phaedrus, when his brother passes away, when his wife passes away, he consoles his friends by giving arguments for the immortality of the soul. So the point of that all this discussion is that people who are in goodness can get that knowledge by living in the mode of goodness. It's not necessarily personalistic. Socrates did not know about Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but he did understand Atma Tattva. And like that, different thinkers can, if they live in goodness, come to knowledge in goodness. So knowledge in goodness means to see the oneness beyond the diversity. And what is that? Avyaya Bhava. It's not just some conceptual oneness, it's a spiritual oneness. The conceptual oneness means, sometimes people may say that, oh, we are all one, all Indians are one, or all global citizens, all human beings are one. There can be humanism, where we see all living beings as one, or all human beings as one, one family. But then what is the basis of that oneness? Actually speaking, there is so much diversity within human beings. So that oneness is not based on a very deep understanding. Okay, because it's again based on the bodily conception itself. Because I am seeing that I am the body, and I am seeing that others are the body, but their bodies are similar to my body. So I won't necessarily have the same kind of affection that I have for an animal, a dog or a cat or a cow. But I have great affection for this particular animal. That's the bodily conception. Body is a human animal. So everybody is animal, and this is human animal, and that's why, because it's human animal, I have some special affection for that. But that is not a very evolved understanding. When one has the evolved understanding, then that is much better. So the primitive understanding over here is that one thinks everybody differently based on their bodily form. But when one sees unity, that is good. But when one sees unity based on spirituality, understanding that there is a common spirit among all living beings, that is knowledge in the mode of goodness. So one doesn't see the diversity of form, one sees the universality of spirit below the diversity of form. Then Krishna will talk about knowledge in the mode of passion. Here, prithak tena tu yajgyanam nana bhavan prithak vidhan vetti sarveshu bhuteshu tajgyanam vidhirajasam. So prithak tena tu yajgyanam Pruthaktvena means there is all diversity. Pruthaktvena is jnanam. Nana bhavan prithak vidhan. Nana bhavan, they are all of different bhavas. They are all of different natures. Pruthak vidhan. Vetti sarveshu bhuteshu. One who sees all living in this way. Tajjnanam vidhirajasam. That knowledge is in the mode of passion. So what is knowledge in the mode of passion? Where one ascribes as one's essential nature that which is one's outer form. So one says, okay, there is a tree over there, there is an animal over there, there is a human being over there. So their external forms are different, therefore their inner natures will also be different. So where one mistakes the outer and the inner to be just one. So for example, in the Christian tradition, there is Aristotle. And there are other thinkers like that also. So they said that there are different kinds of souls only. There is an animal, there is a vegetable soul, there is an animal soul, and there is human soul. And there are different kinds of souls. And then what is the meaning of the word soul? The soul is just some concept or the idea of something which gives life. But then, actually speaking, the Vedic understanding is that all the living beings have the same kind of souls. The difference is not in the nature of the soul, but it is in the extent of the covering on the soul. So the soul in a plant body is covered much, much more. The soul in an animal body is covered less. And a soul in a human body is covered the least. So what is difference is not in the difference in essence or in substance, it is a difference in covering. So when the difference in covering is ended, then the person can move forward and understand what is the commonality of all living beings. But when this sort of differentiation is there, that means the souls in the plants and the animal bodies are of a different nature, and they are not meant to be eternal. The idea is that they are temporary itself. They come into existence with the body and they die with the body. This is a superficial understanding. And we are not criticizing any particular tradition over here. Just pointing out to schools of thought which may be evolved in other ways, but which may be rajasic in this particular analysis of the soul. So in this way, this is knowledge in the mode of passion, where one sees external forms and one assumes the inner essence to be just based on the external forms only. And one doesn't think that there could be a common essence. Because these people, all these species look different, therefore they must be different. No, there is an inner core that is common. And that capacity to see the common core, that is knowledge in the mode of goodness. And inability to see that is knowledge in the mode of passion. So we will continue and discuss about knowledge in the mode of ignorance and then karma and karta in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.